As Capitol Hill tees up the latest attempt to fix what's wrong with the defense acquisition system, it's turned to an array of outside groups for advice. The deadline for comments to the Armed Services Committees was last Thursday, and this week we're talking with a few of the stakeholders congressional leaders consulted and asked to chime in. We turn now to two guests from the Aerospace Industries Association. Betsy Schmid is Vice President of National Security and Acquisition Policy for AIA, also former Staff Director of the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on Defense, and M.J. Mitchell is AIA's Managing Assistant Vice President for National Security and Acquisition Policy, also a former Chief Financial Officer for the F-35 program. They both join us now. MJ and Betsy, thanks a lot for doing this. Welcome to Federal News Radio.
Thanks for having us.
And Frank Kendall, the Undersecretary for Acquisition, Logistics, and Technology, has said it in public a few times lately that none of the big acquisition reform efforts Congress has done over the past few decades seems to have done much to cut back on the cost and schedule overruns in big programs. You said much the same thing in the preamble of your comments back to the committees last week. So let's start really broad. Betsy, let me start with you. Why haven't these previous tweaks worked? And from AIA's perspective, what should the guiding principles be this time around if Congress really wants to make a difference?
Sure, and Frank Kendall is absolutely correct. The acquisition system is a hard one to break into, to understand, and to really make effective change to. It is a huge, burdensome, complex system with hundreds of thousands of people involved, quite frankly. And anything with that big a scope and breadth is difficult to change. This time around, we do feel like there is really momentum in the right direction. Much of that momentum is due, quite frankly, to the Budget Control Act caps. And the fact is the defense budget is going down, and the dollars available for research and development and procurement are getting squeezed. So DOD, leaders in DOD, members of Congress, and other stakeholders are very serious right now about trying to get the most bang for the scarce dollars that they have. One of the ways that they're looking at doing this is a real serious look at how to reform the acquisition system to make it more cost-effective and less burdensome.
And
the leaders in the House and Senate Armed Services Committee are really taking the right look this time around. They're not going for huge change right away. They are studying the issue. They're talking to industry. They're talking to the government. They're talking to longtime veterans of the acquisition system to look for things that they can do quickly to make change, and then address the entire system over a number of years versus just one major initiative.
And has that been one of the problems in the past? Congress takes a big whack at this, thinks it's going to solve the problem in one big bite, and then walks away until it's in vogue again?
In many senses, it is. And so this is one of the first times that I've seen over the years I've been looking at this, a very concerted effort to take this on in bite-sized chunks and really have an impact and take into consideration all the stakeholders at play here. And the House and Senate members are really looking at how do you do this, because we need to make sure that our warfighters have as much as they can get out of the few dollars that are in the accounts these days.
We're certainly not going to do justice to all of the recommendations AIA made, although we will link to the document you guys put out last week. Let's try and tackle a few of them, though. One of the focus areas that you seem to point out is the idea of program managers and program executive officers, and the fact that they don't actually have as much authority to manage their programs as their titles might suggest. Talk me through that a little bit more, either one of you, how disempowered program managers are and how that might be fixed.
Well, I think that the program managers and program executive officers have a lot of oversight themselves, and sometimes that's not very well understood, is that they are reporting not only to somebody who's either more senior to them within their service or within the OSD structure, and all of those people, all of those acquisition executives have many, many people who are experts in their areas who are providing advice, guidance, and insight to that acquisition executive. So the program manager is often somebody who is trying to plan a program, develop a strategy, come up with a great way forward, and there are many more voices in the crowd than his or hers. The other piece that's kind of interesting when you look at empowering program managers and program executive officers is that the acquisition core is often employed in a very functionally stovepipe matrix managed fashion. And while there are some real advantages to matrix management, one of the things that becomes interesting is that many of the people who work in programs actually aren't accountable to the program manager at all. Mm. They're accountable to somebody outside the program. So we really believe that, one, aligning resources and aligning all of the responsibility and authority to the program manager and the PEO that he or she needs to do their job is critically important. We think that if we're going to truly say that these are the accountable and responsible people, they should be enabled to do that job.
That's MJ Mitchell from the Aerospace Industries Association, also talking with AIA's Betsy Schmid. And one of the things that's often said when people look back at acquisition programs that were relatively successful, people point back and say, one of the reasons is that's because there was a strong program manager in place, which suggests to me that it's not necessarily the system in and of itself that makes program managers disempowered, and that can be overcome if you've got the right person in place. Agree or disagree?
I'd agree, and I'd add to that, actually. It's not just the government program manager that needs to be strong. It's the industry program manager as well. Mm. And the better dialogue that the two parties have, the more constant conversation and ability to work through challenges as they arise, the better programs perform.
Another one of the recommendations that you make, kind of along those lines, is that the Defense Contract Management Agency and the Defense Contract Audit Agency should operate more like support for hire to program offices and to program executive officers. Contrast that with how you see DCAA and DCMA operating in the system now as AIA sees it.
And both DCMA and DCAA perform really valid and important functions within the acquisition system. And their roles are very much defined by the charters that have been laid out on their organizations. What we're suggesting is that much of the work they do is really in direct support of program execution. And so the program manager, again, going back to this idea of giving program managers the resources that they need to do his or her job, program managers should have a very core role in determining exactly what support they need from the contract management agency or the audit agency.
One of the other big elements of your recommendations to Congress was find ways to improve the relationship between DOD and its industry partners. And let me just bite off one of those specific recommendations. I don't think anybody's going to be too surprised that an industry group thinks that interim rules that don't allow opportunity for comment are a bad thing. But make the case that that's relevant to this discussion and that it ultimately adds to cost and schedule in programs.
So as you look at interim rules are... They take effect when they're issued, and that means that the industry has to adopt that rule, that regulation, and comply with it right away. And it also means that the government organizations that are stakeholders in what industry is doing also need to have an apparatus in place to comply with it right away. What we're suggesting is that instead of issuing an interim rule saying everybody comply, and then let's talk about whether we got it right or not, why don't we talk about whether we got it right up front and talk about what is it that government is trying to achieve? What does that start to mean when you implement it in terms of not only what government has to do, but also what industry has to do? And is that the most efficient, effective way of achieving the end goal? We think that doing that would make a whole lot more sense than issuing interim rules, which, oh, by the way, are often issued a long time after Congress passes a law. But instead of wasting that time thinking about how to write a rule, let's talk together, let's figure out what needs to get done, and then issue rules that all the stakeholders can embrace.
One other broad theme that you talk about in your recommendations is this idea that in an effort to drive out all possibility of malfeasance in acquisition programs, we've created a structure that really doesn't do a whole lot of provable good other than add additional cost to industry and to the government. I don't know if you've got specific examples in your mind of that phenomenon, but talk a little bit about what you see as the specific problems there.
So there are many of our members talk about instances where they see the oversight regime as being really very controlling and not focused on trying to find decision quality information. And what I mean by that is every activity has risk associated with it. And whether it's a financial audit, you're looking for risk, internal controls, you're trying to identify your risk. Technically, you're trying to identify risk. But the other thing you're trying to do is make sure that you're mitigating those risks and that you have good paths forward for addressing them. Well, you can try to identify every single possible risk, and that's what we're talking about. It's kind of a zero tolerance for mistakes, errors. Or you can understand that there will always be some degree of risk inherent in every activity, and what you want to do is focus on those areas that really make the difference, areas where the information that you gather is going to actually affect a decision, a material decision about the fate of the program or about the status of the contract or whatever piece you're talking about.
These and all the rest of the recommendations, which again we'll link to at federalnewsradio.com, we can't do justice to today. But in order to address these all sound like very concrete ideas, but it's not clear to me whether they can be or should be addressed in specific legislation by Congress or whether these are management issues to DOD. Broadly, how do you think about your recommendations and the right way to implement them and at what level that should be executed?
Quite frankly, a lot of these things are rules that DOD could change themselves, and many of them do not lend themselves to legislative change. But quite frankly, you know, this document was created with both the DOD audience in mind and the congressional audience in mind, and we're going to continue to refine some of these recommendations, work with the committees to come up with additional legislative changes. If you'll recall, this is to inform the 2016 National Defense Authorization Act.
Right.
So July 10th was really our initial shot in the foundation of our work. Now we're going to work with the committees and with our member companies to identify further issues and refine maybe legislative fixes. We're going to work with the Department of Defense to make sure that that they also see the same problems and issues and look for different strategies and ways to implement these, but it really is both legislative and DOD policy changes that need to happen in together to start taking a bite out of this apple.